Road. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Buy premium Irish dry-aged beef at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we'll have our usual culinary conundrums. We're going to be dipping into the Johnstone beef box. Again, Gareth has got the recipe this week. And Kieran McMonagall, who is the genius behind Manny Pizza, easily the most viral gaff to open this year. Kieran, I don't know if you're familiar with him, Gareth, but he would have owned Couch Events back in the day. I would have hired Kieran for high-end weddings, private events and all sorts. But COVID put an end to Couch and that event business. But he regrouped, went into pizza, and have you started with him?
Oh, well, I mean, I know the restaurant, obviously. And what I didn't know is that it started as a food truck. And like all of these food truck stories now, they're getting footprints and taking over restaurants. And the other thing I know is there's always a bleeding queue out the door to this place. So yeah. It's
a Roman style pizza,
yeah,
I believe.
Deep dish, yeah.
Yeah, well, so which I'll be straight up saying I know nothing about, but I can tell you what.
Do you remember the pizza pie factory that was in, it was just off the back of Stephen's Green there. And that one of my earliest memories of eating a pizza was, I think my parents used to bring me there for my birthday or something.
Was that the Chicago pizza?
Yeah, that's it. But it came out in, and I just remember going, because it was nothing like what you were getting at home, right? Now, I think most people understand the thin and crispy. You know?
Yeah, but he has the thin and crispy. Most of the time you associate deep dish with like just gooey and too much cheese and too much
sauce.
Too
bready, I think.
But you'll see anybody, I mean, there's been any amount of Instagram videos and reels of people biting into them and just like the carbonara slice, what a genius thing to come up with. And then I think he's got a lasagna croquette, I believe. Like they're probably two of the...
We'll dig in deep today on dishing it out and find out all the... Because what I'm really interested to talk to them about is his, I don't know if he'll give us the recipe, but like what makes an amazing pizza crust. So my little bit of research, as you know, I bought a pizza oven this year, is the fermentation. Like, so it's not quick pizza dough.
Yeah.
So it's about less yeast, sometimes no yeast, and then really letting that dough develop over a few days because...
And the more gluten gets at, isn't it? Like, and that's why really...
Protein.
Because really, whenever you're eating a pizza like that, it's kind of the same argument about sourdough bread. Very, very similar process. And you want to be eating it that you don't feel bloated afterwards. Yeah. And that's the true makings of the dough then being nice and light. So, looking forward to getting Kieran in here. I think he's a Donegal mucker as well. So it's...
You
might need a translator the day, brother.
Subtitles.
Don't go anywhere. All right, guys. It's the Johnstone Beef Box recipe of the week and you're up.
So I'm going to do, and you know, like we keep asking people every week, what's their ultimate meal or their Death Star meal? And I think I keep changing mine, but this will definitely be up there. It's the rib roast.
Yeah.
So it's obviously, from a chef's point of view, I think there's not a chef out there that wouldn't pick the rib roast as the perfect roasting joint. And the reason being, so the rib roast is obviously from the rib of beef. It comes on the bone. The reason why it cooks so well is because there's that piece of fat that runs down through the center. So as it's roasting in the oven, that piece of fat in the center melts down a little bit and just keeps the meat so moist, so succulent. Obviously, with Johnstone beef, they dry age everything on the bone for a minimum of 28 days, which also, during that process, a lot of the moisture goes and it... What happens is that the flavour of the beef intensifies. So to me, how you roast a rib roast is that you just tie a bit of string in between the bones, in between the ribs, and then you're going to get a heavy skillet pan or a heavy roasting dish.
And just for people listening, Gareth, like you don't need to be a butcher for that. If you can tie your shoelaces, you can put the string between the bones. You don't need to be in a continuous loop.
No, I mean,
like
there's obviously ways to do it, which... I mean, we could show you, but really the one trick I would say to you is if you are tying any piece of meat or any piece of fish, you know the way you tie your shoelaces and you go under once, go under twice. When you go under twice and you pull it, it'll stop it from unraveling and then you just need to tie it
again. The knot doesn't slip.
Yeah, it doesn't slip if you do it twice. That's probably the best tip that I could give you. But and the reason why we tie fillets or ribs or sirloins or any piece of meat. It's just to try and get the meat to hold its shape a little bit and keep it nice and compact as it's roasting, and it won't fall away from the bone. That's why we do it. So smoking hot skillet pan, take your meat out of the fridge at least an hour before you're going to sear it to let it come to room temperature. Then season it really well with salt, and then a little bit of vegetable oil into the pan, or even better, what comes in the boxes from Johnstone is the beef dripping. A little bit of that in there, and then you're going to, like, it needs to be ripping hot. You put your rib in and sear it off really well. Like, really take your time. Get up onto the sides. Start off on the fat cap and really let that fat render down. And then you can take it out, put in a mirepoix of vegetables. And I'm only using a chefy word because we've explained what a mirepoix is loads of times. So it's carrots, onions, celery, leek, little bit of garlic, and some bay leaf and thyme. Sit your meat back on it and then bang it into the oven. Obviously, depending on what size it is. I think they do it as a 2 kilo rib. I think it'll take about an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes. Then you want to let it rest for about 40 minutes. And when you carve into that, you're going to get this wonderfully succulent, tender, still medium.
Yeah, rested pink. Yeah,
rested pink, exactly. I'm not overly keen on a rib roast medium rare. Some chefs, no. I think you have to bring it a little bit past medium.
I'll tell you another cut of beef, right, that's not nice, rare or medium rare, is a fillet steak.
Mm.
It's really, really tough. You've got to have it that it's
people order them blue. Would you ever get that?
Yeah, people get them blue and medium rare. And I'm like going, like, how are you actually eating that meat? Like, it's just too tough. Even the best of beef is too tough. I think a fillet steak, medium rare, is shocking. I really, really do. Like, it's got to be.
You wouldn't even eat a fillet medium rare.
No.
I think it's medium.
I love it pink. Mm. Like, when you cook it at a low enough temperature, like that the whole piece of meat is just nice and pink, but it's a settled pink and it's juicy and it slices well and it eats well. I think if right in the center, it's very difficult to have it medium rare all the way around and then not totally rare in the center. Mm. If you're cooking like a decent 10 to 12 ounce fillet that's a deep, decent depth of size, I just think they're not nice. I don't like eating them medium rare.
Mm. And then, look, the only thing left to do after you've rested it is make your sauce in that with those vegetables. So just throw that roasting dish up onto the stove, put the heat underneath it. Deglaze that. So all you're going to do is pour some red wine in there and it gets all the sediment that's stuck to the bottom of the tray. In with a little bit of beef stock and then pass it, cook it, bring it back up to the boil and then pass it through a sieve, which just takes away all the vegetables. So you're literally going to run the sauce through a sieve. The veg stays in the sieve into a small little pot, reduce it down a little bit more and then a couple of knobs of butter just to thicken the sauce up a little bit and then serve it with your roasted rib of beef and then whatever you like. So
it's Gary, all about the size. Yeah, sides really, isn't it?
I mean, we could go on and bang on about sides, but listen back. I know Gary has given loads of recipes for, you know, potato gratin. And what's that other potato dish that you do with
you call it Dauphinesse, but there's no real name to it. But it's cubed potatoes, diced potatoes with diced onions, sliced and diced cooked ham and diced tomatoes, all mixed together with fine sea salt and white pepper, and then into a roasting tin and covered with cream. And cook it for about an hour and 10 minutes and then finish it with sharp.
And I said
cheddar.
We weren't going to give you the recipe, but Gary just gave you the recipe. Yeah. So there you go.
You got to eat them.
That's a Rosa Penna.
I stayed
special.
In the Rosa Penna last week, actually, and I ate them. They were on the menu.
As good as you remember.
I was in for dinner. It's the first thing I ever cooked in the summer of 93, and they were on the menu the other night. Never went looking. They just happened to be the side dish last Tuesday night when I stayed up there. I went hiking in Donegal.
Big bowl of them.
And I tore into this. I said, oh my God, my favorite spuds are here. Okay, so joining us now in studio is one of my boys, the man behind the most viral gaff that opened this year in Ireland, Kieran McGonigal from Manny Pizza. You're very, very welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you for having us, lad.
Good to have you. We go way back. We're just trying to think there. It's over 10 years anyways.
Yeah.
You would have had an events company that I would have met you through first, Kieran, Catch Events. Do you still have Catch?
Still have Catch.
Yeah, and... Freddie and yourself used to come and do loads of private gigs for me.
That's right.
And hands down, the most professional group of people I ever work with. I think the first time was I was maybe doing something for Lidl and we might have done the Down in the Dark or
that
something
was
like
Down
that.
I'm trying dark. To think. That's yeah, a big success.
There was a big one. There was a few different funky ones that we did. And then obviously once I met you, then I was using you myself. But You then, during COVID, decided, and in true fashion as somebody that takes their job really seriously, you're going to open a pizza gaff, but you wanted to do it all different. Tell us how Manny Pizza was born.
Exactly that. COVID happened, like everyone in COVID stopped working. Well, I was doing this box thing with Catch. We're shipping out these boxes
right.
all around Ireland and Europe, and that was going well. We were doing like a live cocktail masterclass online. So many employees were at home. We were shipping out these cocktail boxes to get the ingredients, to get the equipment. Yeah. Then Fetty would come online. He'd That's do a right. masterclass. And no matter if you're in your gaff, it was a kind of way we all got together. Like, there's the boxing. Everyone was doing the boxing in COVID. So that was going on and we were doing it. And then when the events world started looking like it might be coming back, I was saying to Fed, I was like, do we want to go back into that again full swing? Because we got burned pretty bad, yeah. like all the restaurant game did and everyone else.
Well, the event game and the restaurants and hospitality, bands, live music, I think we were worst hit, weren't we? It was a disaster.
The artists, I think, were the latest.
Yeah, very, very last of them, you know.
I got the wee scare. That's why then I was like, geez, that really scared me. So instead of doing something completely different, I thought, oh, well, maybe we'll open a restaurant, even though that was the probably cheapest idea. So I started saying to Fed. Fed was Italian. He was Roman, obviously. I'd been to Rome a good few times.
And is your background, are you a chef, or did you work front
of the house? No, front of the house. I was front of the house. Okay. I started off doing bars and then got into the restaurant game. And then I got out of the restaurant game because I had enough of it and started the events company. And then I started doing hospitality and that, which was great. Like, you know, we had a very successful run of 7 or 8 years. But then COVID then made me, I don't know, I always had the dream of owning my own place. That was always my little back of the mind to have my own restaurant. And because I had nearly 20 years experience doing it, I felt like, well, I'm not going to do anything else because, well, I've wasted all this time now. Yeah. You know, I may as well utilize it. So in COVID then, we had a couple of trucks that we used for events, the wee vans. So we changed one of the vans. And then I said, well, we're going to do this other van. And then I started thinking about Roman Pizza. And I said, no one here is doing it. Like, someone should really learn how to do it. I wonder, is there any chefs here who know how to do it? So I started, and there was no one here who could do it. And then I was like, well,
do it yourself.
So I started going down that
rabbit hole. Where did you see it, or where did you experience it? Like, what made you think of that?
Madly, me and my wife went about 10 years ago to Rome, and we stayed in an Airbnb. And the Airbnb we stayed in was above a Roman Pizza joint.
Oh, right.
It was right upstairs. So these people worked there. Actually, by the end, I knew all their names, and they were laughing at me because
you're eating so much pizza.
Before I was going out,
stuffing your face, mucker.
Getting up for breakfast, and then I was having pizza for breakfast. Then I go with the wife and have actual breakfast, and then we go off for a walk around. We come back to the gaff. And before we go back, she'd be like, I'm going to just pick up the slices.
Yeah.
So have a few wee slices. Then we were going out for dinner and have and my starter would be a couple of wee slices of pizza. You know?
Jesus Christ, you greedy hurricane.
So every day for like 5 or 6 days, I was just eating this pizza nonstop. And that was when I first realized, geez, no one's doing this style. Neapolitan style
is massive
here. And New York style obviously kicked off. And I was like, no one in Ireland's doing this style. And this is amazing. Like light, crispy, really firm, you know, really airy. Someone should learn how to do it. But I never in my mind was it me who was going to learn. I was like, someone should do this. But my little entrepreneur brain was saying, could I find someone who could make this, blah, 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 blah. And that's where it came about. That's when I planted the seed of Roman style. And then obviously I parked that, but COVID must have resurrected it somewhere. You know?
right.
Whenever we had this empty truck and I was like, oh, we'll do this, you know. And
So you had it in a food truck initially, right? Because that's something that we didn't really know about until like you started going with festivals, was it, or what?
Well, I bought this hand-built Castelli Roman oven first because it's a special oven
that's
used for the style of pizza. I don't know how nerdy people get on this program.
Get nerdy, man. Yeah, go in, too funny.
Right? Well, it's because the heat of the pizza is controlled Roman style by top and the bottom, and it's baked on a sheet pan. It's baked in a blue steel pan. So you depending on what you're putting on top and depending on the hydration of the dough and depending on how thick it is, you're changing the temperatures
on top and bottom
and you're changing length times and you're taking the pizza out and you're spinning it and you're putting it in certain parts of the oven.
There's loads of scale involved.
a lot more skill than most other pizzas. I'm not going to diss any other pizza makers, but I'm going to say Roman style pizza is the hardest style to make.
Right.
So is, and is it like a focaccia that's loaded? Is that
correct? Kind of focaccia style-y. High hydration, 80% hydration.
Shit, right.
What is it? What does that mean for people that don't understand hydration?
It means that, that the percentage of water to the main ingredient is 80%.
Yeah.
So so the most Neapolitan style are 70, even 65 to 70 normally, you know. Reminds, what that means for the pizza is that when it's let ferment long, it grows really high, but then when it hits the heat, it gets really airy because it pops the same as a focaccia when it's done right, you know. So it means that with this pan style, when you put it in the pan and you bake this on the steel pan with a high heat of about 380 to 400, you're getting that crunchy bottom, and then it's popping with the airy in the middle, and then you've got a really good structure on top, and it means you can put nearly anything on top of the style of dough, you know, because it's quite solid style.
And how important was the ingredient finding process, like the flour, the tomatoes that you're using for the tomato sauce? Or
again, it was all back to trying to be Irish first, was always the first stop, like we do, you know, trying to look after our own. And then unfortunately, with the likes of flour here in Ireland, we don't really produce the flour that I need. I need a flour with that can take this high hydration, so that's, it needs to be 13% higher than that, maybe 15% in order for it to hold this water structure, you know. And in Ireland, because we get so much rain,
there's too much moisture in the flour.
Too much moisture in there, and it needs to be higher than that. So I couldn't find any flour here for the main part of the pizza. I did find the guys at Oak Forest Mill, which I use a bit of their blend in my mix.
Right.
I'm not going to give away too many secrets.
No.
That's in there.
Yeah.
So, and then with the cheese, I use Irish cheese. I use the lads down Cork. Toby, it does amazing cheese down there, you know. And and then with my tomato sauce, I use, it's Italian.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell too many secrets there either, but
finding
the right ingredients here, and then maybe if I couldn't find them here, I'm going out and seeing where.
And it's not just about the ingredient dialer, Kieran. So probably your most famous one was the carbonara slice. Like, you tap into one of the most famous dishes of all time. I was only on with Anton Savage last week, chatting about the fact that Heinz are now making it in a tin, you know, and Manuela Spinelli and I were on air talking about
carbonara.
You can now buy carbonara in a tin. Heinz have started to make carbonara in a tin. But I haven't had it. No. I mean, spaghetti hoops in a tin now, I'm partial to it. And if you think about it, you know, you turn your nose up at it and then you say, yeah, but I bet you eat spaghetti hoops. You're like, who doesn't? You know what I mean?
Baked beans.
So, like, I don't mind carbonara with cream. I mean, I obviously, when I make it at home, I'll make it with egg yolks and whatnot, parmesan and emulsions. But like that, you tapped into one of the most talked about, destroyed variations of it, you name it, and the carbonara slice was born. Was it just the love of the flavor, or did you know it was going to have such a big, like, bang effect?
When I was in Rome, and the first guy who taught me there, I went and worked at his pizzeria in Rome, and I went initially to learn at the first stage. Now, I've been to three different dudes to teach me this style, you know, but he had a version of a carbonara slice that was good, but I was like, if he only done it like this, then this would be way better. And it's bacon and egg, lads, bacon and egg on bread, you know. So, like, I always knew, and I swear to God, when I seen it and I ate it, I said, Irish people would fucking love this.
Yeah.
So that's where my initial, and I, in my brain, and when I brought it back and I gave it to people, now, I was baking for a year before anyone tasted any of my pizza. That's the first thing I'll tell you. I had a warehouse and I was making this pizza and no one was trying it. The only person who was trying it was my wife.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let anyone else.
She like my wife, and she's a good judge. If it's shite, she's telling you. Because that's what you need.
Yes.
Honest audience, don't you?
I was scared because it was my first venture into cooking at that scale or doing things, you know what I mean? And I was hyping it up, maybe, or people were asking me what I was doing, and they knew I was away in Rome learning. And then when I came back,
how long did you wait for? Like, what were the stages for?
I went for a month with the one guy in Rome, over and back, And then I went to another guy in Madrid. I was only there for 2 weeks with him, but every day. And it was a mixed bag. You're working in this lab or a school, and then you're working in the pizza shop as well. So you're seeing both sides. But back to the carbonara was when your man gave it to me and I ate it, I was like, oh, this is, I'm definitely robbing this.
Oh, right.
You know, take this except, no, you're doing it a completely different way to me.
Yeah.
But carbonara on pizza was.
But that's how chefs come up with dishes all the time, Kieran, as you've probably learned now that you have fulfilled the dream. You do have your restaurant now in a way. Chefs will eat something and you're like, I can see that. Like when I'm in the K Club, I can see that going into one of my restaurants. Only I'll flip pork for beef or I'll flip chicken for partridge or whatever it's going to be at the different time of year. And in your instance, it was some version of bacon and egg on a bread, and you're like going carbonara. Yeah,
Paddy's love carbonara.
It's up there, but probably is sort of, yeah, I'd say it is our best seller.
Yeah, the next one has to be, and I was like, why did I never think of that, a deep fried lasagna? I mean,
there, brother.
Jesus, man.
That's pure dirt.
Like, you should get, I don't know, like, if there's OBEs or CBEs in Ireland, whatever the version is, but I remember the first day I saw that, and I laughed, and I went, what a fucking genius. I was like, what a cool thing to think about.
Bonci was the man who came up with that. No, not me.
Who?
But there's a guy in Rome.
Yeah.
And that's what he specializes
is
in.
Everything. Pan-made?
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's in a panko crust. I haven't tried it. Yeah. We're usually in here on a Monday and the bus is parked. You're not open. But I haven't been yet, mate.
Oh.
I mean, I've been sharing it and loving it and showing you the love since the day you opened. But, no, I haven't been down yet, but it's on
it's
the
literally, cars. By the way, for listeners out there, it's about a 5-minute walk down the road. Manny Pizza, we're right beside Jersey.
It's right beside
so
it.
So he's being a right lazy box telling me he has a he's inviting me in here to do this podcast, hyping me up, and he's telling me he's not being there. Good man yourself, Gary. Thanks for being. But anything like all the deep fried stuff that he was doing over there in Rome, that inspired me too. You know, your man is a bit of a genius. He's my pizza hero, you know.
Yeah. And they were all good to you with the guys there. Did you tell them you were opening your own place in Dublin and they were happy to share ideas to or you said nothing?
I was paying them.
Yeah.
I was paying them to be there. And I was like paying to do a stage. It's kind of weird because I was in there from 6 in the morning grafting. And then it was fine if you weren't getting paid. You know, people, as you know, in your game, they don't only do it to learn experience, but I was actually paying them.
And how did you find that person that you went to in Rome?
Well, the first guy was really good. The second guy was good. But the third guy, I don't know if it's fair to even say these people's names because then I'm saying one's better than the other. He was the master. He was the one. But I think by that stage too,
you're getting wiser.
Exactly. Yeah. I had known exactly, well, this is what I want and this is what I need. And maybe you're taking in everyone's information and you're saying, yeah, maybe that works here, but that wouldn't work in Dublin. Do you know what I mean? Or it wouldn't work in Ireland.
That's all part of it.
Yeah.
So you're figuring all that stuff out. And then the last dude, he taught me a certain way to ball. And the balling's quite hard in this pizza, you know. And it gets balled 2 or 3 different stages. You know, it's bulk fermented for 72 hours. Then you ball it once. Then you park it for about 12 hours and you ball it again. Then you park it again.
Put it onto the tray, are you putting balls down and then it bleeds into itself?
Stretching it out is one big.
Okay.
So you're putting it down on your main table source first. You're stretching that out into the shape of your pan. Then you're switching it into your pan and then you're stretching it out. But all this time, mad important that you're not overworking it at all because it's full of air.
Keep the air in it, right?
Yeah.
Full of air in there and you want to keep that going. So you're working it in a way, it nearly should be, if it's done right, that the ball basically just like a sheet, you know. You pick it up and it just sits in the pan and there's not a lot of work needed on it, you know. If you're overworking it too hard, then you're going to...
You're punctured.
And when you go to put the toppings on it then, is it like a focaccia?
There's a wee bit of working, poking with the finger, but it's not like you're not going
right in
deep in, you know.
Does it get kissed with olive oil before?
Depending on the pizza, yeah.
Right, okay.
Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them get sauce, some of them don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's depending on what you're putting on top there, you know. But working it as little as possible is definitely the key.
And how many days ferment is the dough?
72 hours is the mix. Wow. So it gets bulk fermented for 24 and then we ball and then we do another ferment maybe for half. Depends on, and that's the other side of pizza that I didn't understand. It depends on
humidity.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was happening with that water
your
today?
Time of year, yeah.
What was happening in the air today? who made the pizza, who did the mix, did they put in the right amounts, like human error, as you know, when you're doing chefing, yeah. cooking, is like, did they forget one thing along the line?
Yeah, the salt too early and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly.
Did they let it come up to too much temperature? So all trying to systemize that has been the
But crack, it's incredible for most people that think that, oh, pizza's pizza and it's simple. And I've been saying this for I don't know how many years, you know, like that simple's a word that I hate people using, because only when you know how. I mean, I'm listening to that and I'm fairly nifty at pizzas and breads and doughs and stuff, and I'm still struggling to envisage handing that off, because you can't be doing that all the time. But as you say, you might arrive at the 72nd hour and you're the one that's maybe working on Thursday, and you're going to go in and start making them, and you're like, Jesus, this doesn't feel right.
Correct.
Who made the original mix? I know by touching this now that it's not going to rise properly. And now you're trying to claw back and you're like going, oh my God, like, what am I going to do that I've lost 72 hours? If this batch is ruined, and I'm sure it's happened already, yes. And you're like, boys, I can't damage the business. Like, what am I, like, this is all wrong. The amount of red flags potentially over that 72 hours, it's so stressful.
Dude, I'll be honest, like, there's been stages there, and I can see it now. Pizza has went out there, and I was like, had to close my eyes and watch it go into customers' hands, because I can't go backwards.
No.
That's the thing. And you can't, unlike another recipe you're cooking, and like a lot of them, you can just, okay, let's redo this, lads, fuck that in the bin, excuse my French,
yeah,
and let's do this again. You can't go back in time with a pizza dough. Like, no. Once you're at 72 hours and it's a Friday night, you gotta make it work. So there's a lot you can save it a little bit when it's not ripe by stretching now, because when I started, you imagine on a Tuesday, Wednesday, I need to decide how many pizzas I'm going to sell on a Saturday, you know? And I have never been open on a Saturday before.
Yeah.
I've never been. I had no power level. I had no gauge of anything.
Yeah, how mental it's going
to
be.
So we just went, okay, let's see if we can last till 6 o'clock first. And we get to 6, and then we were getting to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're opening at 12. Then we were getting to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're 2 hours because we're running out. And I was like, right, lads, it's double the batch, treble the batch, quadruple the batch. And then you're
nice,
thinking,
nice problems. So.
But been trying to be smart, being like, I'd much rather that we're finishing, that we're running out and figuring out this quantity every time. And then after, like, obviously, customers only put up with that for a certain amount of time when they're coming at 2 or 3 o'clock and you're sold out already. So we're bigging up. And then of course, the other problems is storage then. How big is our cold room? We had to extend our cold room 2 or 3 times to take the dough quantities. And then how many humans are touching it now? Because we need people doing it from 6 in the morning. There's people doing it at 5 in the afternoon. There might be people balling at 11 at night, and there's all that process. And then who are these people? So without letting the thing get too out of hand, do you know what I mean? Where it's not being managed properly, and the chaos of that.
Yeah.
I think the pre-planning on something that 72 hours in the making is just, that's the real melter.
It's insane, yeah.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef. Explore delicious recipes and discover their premium selection on johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef, a tradition of Irish dry-aged beef built on 60 years of passion. Learn more at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
And are you customer-faced as well? Because just before we started here, you mentioned that you hit your Everest, you did a live radio show, and you have a stutter. And I know we know each other 10, 12, 13 years or more, and I never, ever knew it. And it is something, I suppose, that we said right before we came on that you wanted to chat about, or can talk about. But it's incredible. Talk about the method that you use there. Because obviously you're customer facing now as well. When are you Billy Big Balls? You're nowhere near the place, are you?
Are you any other buzz in there listening now, they're probably like, yeah, he is. No, I'm there every day. But now I'm not as in the kitchen as I was before. Like, I think, as I was saying earlier about working on the business, not in the business, I'm trying to open number two. So I'm not there as much in the mix of the kitchen and the front of the house. But yes, on my speech thing, weirdly, when I was coming in here today, the last time I was in this building, I'd done an interview with Anton for his show on Today FM, it was at the time. And I talked fully about my speech and having a stutter and growing up and with a stutter and joining the Maguire program. And people who are listening now will probably hear, once I've said what a little bit of my technique, I use breathing, I use this costal breathing to speak, and I use different techniques when I'm talking to help me get through conversations. But today I was really busy morning. I went back and came out at 9, back to back with meetings. And then you text me whatever time and said, "Hey, you're meeting at 1 here." I was like, "Oh crap, I haven't done any prep for," and I don't mean prep for my speech.
We don't anyway, so it's
I don't even prep to be talking shit. I mean, prep to come in and actually do. So that to me then, I'm like, crap. So
and you would have to be thinking about that, would you? Like,
I do my breathing normally in the morning, and I work about a technique, and I make a few calls. I'm a coach on the program, so I coach other kids that have stutters or adults.
When did you come to that? When did you start this?
Well, I'm 45 now, and I'm on the program in May 08 was my first course. So,
and before that, was it just this thing you lived with that there was no?
Yeah, well, I was trying to get a cure from speech therapy and books. And
I was going to say, so for 30 years, you would have been, what, 29, 30?
I was 25 when I joined the program.
Yeah. And and where did you hear about it? And what exactly is it? And you may tell us the details of it.
It's invented by a guy called Dave Maguire in America, and I don't know the exact amount of memberships, but they say that 1 in 4 people could have a stutter, you know, so it's pretty high number, you know. And in Ireland, in hospitality, I actually know a fair few people who work in hospitality in Dublin alone that are stutterers like myself. And it came about to me through, I think it might have been me mammy, believe it or not, who may have put me forward when I was really young, like 18 or 19. And there was no way I was doing it then because I didn't want anyone to know I had this stutter.
Yeah, you were able to hide it then?
Well, I was very good covert.
Right, okay.
And I used to call myself the James Bond, the stuttering. Because everything was undercover, you know. I was trying my best not to let anybody know. And that was...
But you're probably avoiding lots of situations, though, were you? Like to be in front of people?
Painful,
or?
Gary. Yeah. Painful. Avoiding phone calls, avoiding word displacement was the big one, where you'd say a different word and then you might sound like a bit of an idiot because you're never saying what you really want to say, you know.
Yeah.
But when I went to join, I think my mum tried to get me and I said, no way, not doing that. And then eventually it got to the stage where I knew that I had to do something about it. And that's when I done my first course with Maguire. And as I say, you know, I'm a coach myself and I help other people.
It was an early instant, the benefits.
No, man, it's daily. It's not even now, as I say, how many years, May 08, whatever it is now, who can do the math? I still struggle with it every day. It never goes away. It's a problem I have to face on my daily life. And it's just, you need to put in the work. Like I said, today I didn't get up and do what I would have liked to have done to be prepped. Same as any big day in the kitchen, get up early, get into your preparation, get ready for, and I knew if I'm going to have a big speaking day, even in work, that I'll have to put in a wee bit of practice. And it's kind of like a car engine or if you don't look after it and service it, it starts to get rusty again, you know?
Right.
So,
well, good for you, man. Because, I mean, honest to God, until you said it today, hey, and I mean, we've had, I mean, periods where we wouldn't see each other at all. Like, but I mean, we worked together for many, many, many events. And I never, you know, so you obviously have great control over it, you know.
He just told you he was playing.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, my name's Kieran. I've got a stutter. Nice to meet you.
Like, no, but like every other Donegal person, like you're fucking chatting at 100 miles an hour, like, you know what I mean?
No, I think that is an thing about Donegal people. We do tend to talk really fast.
Aye.
So usually you would pick it up. People listening that are kids or
that's why we wanted to kind of chat about it. Like, it's brilliant to see that there's a program out there that can help you. Rock and roll, and look, it has infected the business for you and pushing on. It's just another wee blotch
quirk
in the road.
Quirk that I have. And anyone who is listening who does want to find anybody, I'm happy to help anybody. If anyone reaches out to you guys, I'm happy for you to share information. I'm always willing to spread the word about it because there is a lot of people out there who are maybe ashamed or embarrassed by it, and just, you know, it's
no, there, good
there's,
for you.
There's help out there for it.
Yeah, that's the, so you mentioned number two there. Now, this is the age-old dilemma for good restaurants.
There we go.
Doubling down or going for another one. I suppose, though, with the likes of that, it's an easy one to replicate in a way because it's so set in its ways. Mm. You know what I mean? You get the dough right and the pizza right. I always find with restaurants, Kieran, when they go to different sites or bigger sites, it's the original restaurant and it's the ambience and that original head chef. That's very hard to move into another place. But with the likes of maybe Manny from the food truck to like multiple outlets, really you get the dough right and all the places, you get everything right. Would you agree? That's what you're hoping anyway.
Well, the system is there in Norway. We are very systemized in Mani as far as Norway, where like everything is done. Boxes are ticked every day. Everything has to be approved by a chef. I have a chef there now who looks after all that process. So I know that if I can replicate that same system now, we've set it up and we know how it rolls, I can definitely repeat it somewhere else. I'm not in a big, like, take over the world, Manny headspace scenario. I think I would like to have one more in Dublin on the other side of the river. I think I'd like to do that. After that, you know, success and whatever that may mean, that word, or making money, whatever that may look like eventually. And although I think now I've got a couple of kids, I have a wife, I have two very young kids, one's 3, one's 5. My time with them now at this age is more important to me than opening 10 of these Mannies. So I am looking at a number 2. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, the one I have here, it's tipping away, doing its thing. I have a life. Everyone who works there has a life.
Yeah.
No one works over 42 hours a week there.
Yeah.
That's a rule by rule, that I don't want people burning. And we're open from 6, like there's people there from 6 in the morning until 1 in the morning. So it's a big team of 29 people working there.
Wow, right. Good for you, man.
But full and part-time now in that mix.
Yeah.
But about 15 full-time and the rest are probably part-timers. But we need that in order to spread out this early...
Yeah,
the amount of hours people are doing. I really don't want people doing stupid hours, and I don't think it's healthy. And I think, if you can afford to do that, no one should be doing over 50 hours a week. Really, what's happening now in the game out there? Is it still going on out there?
No. Well, certainly in the kitchens I run, they used to. In the kitchens that I was running, but now, we're 40 to 45 hours, depending on what the business level. Sometimes. There's less sometimes that people can take another day off if they want to, you know. And the conversation on here, especially, we've been leading the conversation. We had another chef sitting there a few weeks ago, Ed Cooney from the Merion, and he was talking about trying to get our game for people to aspire to want to go and work to. And the first thing that we had to address was work-life balance.
Correct.
Because, you know, people often say this to me, just because you work in some of the evenings doesn't mean you can't have work-life balance. Like, my kids are a little bit older and we're in and around the same age. I got to bring my kids to school. I used to love going and being able to be there at breakfast time, and we had a whole ritual about, because I knew I wasn't going to be there for dinner because I was doing dinner service. And then I'd speak to people I work with and maybe that work on the office side of the business, and they'd be like, geez, I never get to have breakfast with my kids, or I never get to walk them to school.
There you go.
So, you know, it's about telling that story as well, I think, you know. And then really, I mean, we can see how passionate you are about telling your food story, and we've had loads of people sitting there, and it helps you travel. Like, many jobs are out there that they're going to send you to Italy to pay somebody to learn your craft. But isn't that just so cool? Well, I think it's so. I have a million questions for you about pizza, because I bought a pizza oven this year, and before that, like, a pizza dough to me was a 2-hour process, because I was using instant yeast and I was clattering in. I was making very tasty pizzas. Yeah. I'd no pizza oven. But then I bought a pizza oven and I started really... No, I was making sourdough across lockdown, so I have an understanding of bulk fermentation.
Yeah.
And then I drifted into, do you know, if I actually make the pizza dough the day before, I'm getting much chewier crusts, much lighter crusts. Yeah. And I'm still learning. Like, I still... Do you use yeast, or?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's very small amounts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that really blew my mind, that the longer you leave it prove, the less cheese you have to put in.
Exactly. I'm using like
so much more comfortable.
Not 0.06 or 0.07.
Like, well,
tiny, because it's long fermentation, you know.
And it is a, you use a fresh or dried?
Both, depending, okay. You know, okay. Depending
just
on
keeps his cards close.
I know he's about it.
But I will say this.
Just write the recipe down there.
but I will say this about people buying ovens, and it would happen massively because loads of people bought pizza ovens there over COVID and they had them at home. And I don't know if people in their minds thought, oh, I'm going to make some pizza. And then when they realized that the process, then they go and buy their which, you know what, in the bad way to do, you buy your pre-baked, you know, the ones you buy in
your supervisor
or whatever, and you bend them in and top them and you use your oven to do that. Now, it's not really the way, but when they realized, I have to think what day I'm going to, okay, we're going to have pizza on Saturday with the kids.
That means
on Wednesday I need to start making dough. And people are like, this guy.
I think it, like, when you're in the game, it's a little bit easier.
Of course,
right? I mean, obviously, and naturally, because I work in kitchens and I've worked in all the sections, I have a lot of the skill that, you know, that from shape to form and like,
course,
you know, so
and you're interested,
you want to know
the process, but a lot of regular juice soups,
not regular,
I still do the frying pan method, like I don't use the pizza oven, it's incredible.
Well.
If you know how to handle it, it's amazing. Like, I mean, I've got a phenomenal oven as well, like, and the grill part just goes, it's a Wolf oven, it's brilliant.
Goes for it.
So I get the top heat perfect, because obviously the bottom heat I can control with the gas, like I've a stock ring and the other larger ones. But once you master that, like, because I've got the domes as well for the commandos, but I don't think they're ever as good as an actual pizza oven. They don't get hot enough. They're still brand new, sitting in the garage, all the attachments to all the different barbecues. But the frying pan method, I just love it, man. You know, so I've
all my doughs
boxed off and ready. But like that, like I do a it's usually the first raise and then break down, knock back, and then I do it's an eight to nine hour rise with the dough balls in a warm part. I have a wee area over by the French doors in the patio that I'd always keep the doughs over there, you know what I mean? So, but like that, if I'm going to do it, it's either the night before or at 6 or 7 a.m. on a Saturday. If Annette's sister's coming or sister-in-law's coming up, she always likes sitting at the island with a glass of wine. And I just stand and I love making pizzas and dish out a different flavor. I've all my gear ready to go. And I am in my element, man. Just make a pizza, then it's the next one. It's one, you know, it's an olive oil one, a tomato one. I love a barbecue one as well for those that like to destroy pizzas. But I love a barbecue base. You know? Yeah, and it's a really, really cool thing to play around with flavors. It's universally loved, isn't
correct.
It? Yeah.
And pizza's so personal, lads. There's no, when people say, you know, there's lots of great pizza in Dublin.
Now there is.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Fairly new phenomenon.
Yeah, only in the last 5 years has the pizza game changed. I'm not going to start name dropping anyone because someone might get offended by me not saying that. But there's lots of great pizzas. But pizza is so personal to you. You can say that this guy's pizza is better than that guy's pizza, and this is better. It's like, no, man, whatever pizza you like is your pizza.
Now,
you like Domino's, like Ed over here, eating fucking Domino's when I came in. Sound man, Ed, thanks for making.
It was disgusting. I just wanted to make sure.
But if you like Domino's, you like Domino's. Who am I to judge on that? Like, pizzas, everyone takes it so personally, and they have a right to take it personally.
Of course.
And there's so many different styles. Those styles are completely different pizza.
Well, there's a style of cooking, but like New York, is there a style to eat the Manny pizza, or you just eat it whatever?
Fingers, bro.
Eat it whatever.
Manny's all about fingers.
But you see, in New Yorkers, you know, you got to tap it. A lot of them, then you should move the cheese down to the end. You roll it. You're meant to eat the slice in three bites. Like, they're all these weird little quirks where they're like, going, oh, you're not a New Yorker. You're not eating your pizza right. You'd be like, yeah, go away.
Someone starts telling me how to eat something.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at
flattered.
Yeah, thank you, bro. Clatter. That's a good one to go over here. Clatter.
Yeah, so look, we do a Last Supper here to wrap up every guest that we have on. What's your death row feed?
Oh, man, mine's is so stupidly simple. Mine's is bangers and mash with beans, brother.
Oh, yes.
Buttery mashed potato, right? Yeah. Really buttery, good quality sausages and baked beans. Dude, that is simple.
Jeez, on a 72 fermented.
Oh, I know. No fucking simple.
I love a bangers and mash.
Yeah, brother.
Top class.
Has to have that buttery mash. Then maybe soft Brennan's bread or a nice style of bread with the sausage and rolling it up and just Tavernat, like a buttered sausage
red
roll,
sauce.
You know?
Oh, red sauce. Yeah.
Simple stuff, lads. Keep it easy, you know.
Done it. Well, listen, thanks a million for coming in, Kieran. Wishing you continued success and all the other ones that you're going to open. I hope they're successful as the first, brother. All right, thank you.
Thanks very much, lads. Appreciate it.
Kieran was a great guy, wasn't he?
What that man doesn't know about pizza is not worth knowing.
You understood us okay, did
just
you?
Just about, yeah. Ed was sliding notes under his computer there for all the little bits that I didn't understand. But yeah, absolutely sound. And you know what, I'll tell you this much. I'm looking forward to a pizza when we get out here this afternoon.
Yeah,
man.
He
straight
owes
around.
He owes a boys one on the house
now. VIP style, left, straight
kid.
To the top
up
of the queue.
Kid.
Okay, so that brings us over to Ed's moment to shine. Ed, Chef, Culinary Conundrums, what we got, brother?
My weekly highlight. Hello, Gareth, Gary, and Ed. Oh, I got mentioned. This is good. Thank you for all your food and cooking tips and tricks. I love the podcast and listen every week. All right. Now, could you please provide a recipe for a chip shop curry sauce to make as a Friday fakeaway? Thank you, Niamh.
Yeah, well, I have a lovely wee katsu type curry sauce, right? And it's absolutely stunning. And what you want to do is just get, and this will probably do 5, 7, 6, 7, 8 portions easily. If you get one fairly large carrot, peel it, and dice it into what we call the brunoise, right? So you dice it into as fine, cut them into like 3 sections first, about an inch thick, and then cut them into little slices, and then in turn into tiny, tiny little julienne, and then a dice. It's called the brunoise cut. Get it as small as you can. One red onion, do the same. Dice the red onion as small as possible. Take one finger of ginger and grate it, and take one clove of garlic and grate it. Set it all aside. Heat a heavy based saucepan, add in a little bit of vegetable oil, get a bit of heat into it, in with the garlic, in with the ginger, and start to sweat it. And then once you get a tiny little bit of cook on that and the aroma starts coming up, in with the carrot and in with the onion, salt, white pepper, and sweat that until the onion is starting to soften, no color, but soften it really, really well. And then once you're happy that you've kind of half cooked the veg, and you're talking about 4 or 5 minutes here max on a medium heat, then in with about 3 tablespoons of a mild Sharwood's curry powder, 2 teaspoons of turmeric, 1 teaspoon of cumin, and then maybe a little bit of ground coriander or ground fenugreek if you have it as well, okay? And then throw in like maybe a half a cinnamon stick, okay? Start to sweat that or fry that in the vegetable oil as well. And now add in about 3 tablespoons of flour. Turn the heat down low and cook that. It'll be dry. It'll start to get smoky. You just want to cook it for about 4 or 5 minutes gently. And then in with about a half a large jar of Sharwood's mango chutney, right? This is where the sweetness is going to come from. So you're going to pour in about a half a jar or about 8 or 9 tablespoons of Sharwood's mango chutney. Mix that up and then pour in, if you have chicken stock, pour in chicken stock, but you can just pour in water, bring it to the boil. You're probably going to throw in about 400 mils, start with 300 mils of water. Start to mix it really, really well with a wooden spoon or a spatula. Turn up the heat. Once it comes to the boil, it'll start to thicken. And then just add tiny, tiny little bits of water to it until it gets down to the consistency you want. And then you can crumble in 1 Knorr chicken stock cube. Just 1 stock cube is all you need. Give it a wee taste. Let that simmer for about 45 minutes to make sure all the curry and all the curry spices cook out. And you'll have the most beautiful, sweet katsu style curry sauce that you can pour over chicken, you can pour it over chips, curry cheesy fries, whatever you want. But that is a beautiful curry sauce.
Brilliant, brilliant. And good luck with that, Niamh. Now, hello, chefs. I love experimenting with flavors, but I'm struggling to balance acidity in my dishes. How do you know when you've added just the right amount of acid? And what are some tips to fix a dish that's become too sour? Jason Dunn in Killorglin.
Really, what the process you're going through, Jason, is just the process of cooking, I'm afraid. It's just trial and error. Like, all you're doing is just educating your palate. And through that process, sometimes you add in a little bit too much lemon, sometimes you add in a little bit too much lime. Sometimes you add in a little bit too much sherry vinegar or white wine vinegar, whatever it is. And really, the only way to bring something back if it's too acidic is to add something sweet. So you can add in a little bit of sugar, or you can add a little bit of palm sugar. Or Gary just gave a cool example there of how to balance a sauce there by using an ingredient like a mango chutney or a sweet chili sauce. Or
yeah.
So, you know, like if you don't just want to go straight in with a raw sugar, add an ingredient that has a bit of sugar in it, and like a chutney or a relish. But really enjoy the process. You know, like it sounds to me that you're on the right track. And like, so always remember, it's much harder to add less. It's harder to take stuff back out again. So it's really about forcing yourself into adding a little bit, giving it a stir, cooking it for a second, tasting it, thinking about what's happened from before you added it to what's happened, and then a little bit more, taste it. And it's really, the technique of tasting is one that needs to be learned. I know we were asked recently, can you teach? We were actually on the 6 o'clock show last week, and the researcher asked me, I don't know if she asked you as well, can you teach somebody how to cook and taste? Or is that something that you just know? And everybody can learn how to cook.
Mm.
Don't be listening to these clowns that are saying, oh yeah, you're born with a palate and all. Stop.
Yeah.
You know, it's like any... Yeah, but it's like anything. They're all techniques and skill that you need to learn. But the fact that you're asking the question, and the fact that you're...
Well, the fact that this guy is seasoned, and he's at the stage of seasoning with citric acid, yeah, he's already balling.
Boy. Yeah. Exactly.
He's doing all right. Yeah.
When life gives you lemons, Jason.
Exactly.
This one is a bit curious. Hi, fellas and Ed. So I don't count as a fella. We can get into that again, Marion.
Yeah.
Absolutely adore the pod. Paul Harrington is such a gent, and what a voice indeed. Quick one for you both. I recently bought a mandolin slicer and I'm a bit intimidated by it. What are your top safety tips for using it, and what are some creative ways to incorporate it into everyday cooking? Many thanks and keep up the great work. Marion in Cork.
Those things scare the shite out of me.
I think it is. Like,
sorry, what are they? I don't know what that
it's
is.
It's basically like, think of your phone, and in the middle of it, it's a flat instrument that has a blade in the middle.
Oh, Jesus.
And when you, there's a little thing that moves the yoke up and down. You can't see what I'm doing here, but when you move it down a little bit, whatever, if you push a carrot, it just keeps it nice and
it's like a saw, a wood saw kind of.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, it's exactly like a wood plane. It's like a wood plane, only it's upside down.
Hand along where the blade is.
So it's an upside down wood plane, And the first thing, like a Thermomix, the first thing that you lose is the wee cup on top. I think I have the only Thermomix the in Ireland that has the original cover. But the first thing to go missing on a Japanese mandolin is the safety guard, right?
Oh, God.
And chefs are always slicing and dicing at 100 mile an hour.
Did you ever see the one where Rick Stein blade and lobs the top of his thumb off on TV?
I have a Japanese mandolin in my garage, right, with a lot of different gadgets out there, from motorbikes to Thermomixes. And I look at that Japanese mandolin every week or every other week, and I'm still not able to take it out
it's
of the box.
Glaring at you.
They scare the bejesus out of me.
Best bit of advice is use the hand guard.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, use the hand guard.
And when you lose the hand guard, put it in the bin, put it at the bottom of the bin, put five bags on top of it. make sure nobody takes it out of the bin and that it gets disposed of that day. And watch the bin lorry leave your driveway with it in it.
Get an old priest and a young priest. Okay, listen, Marion. Recipes.
Yeah. Coleslaws and do you know what's perfect for? Any little crunchy vegetables. So like if you're trying to add a little bit of a texture into a noodle salad or even a stir fry, if you, julienne, I'm going to use that chef word, but if you cut your vegetables really thin, and there's actually a little gadget that slides in and it'll cut these like matchstick thin vegetables out, carrot, celeriac.
Well, just the katsu curry I talked about there.
Yeah.
If you were to take them carrots, jab the guard into that one-inch carrot pieces and just go boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You'll just go about 10, 12 times and you'll have millimeter thick slices of carrot or two, because you just turn the dial and you move the blade up and down. And then you just run your knife through it and you've got your... It takes all the hard work out of it. And the Japanese love them because it's a cuisine that is just so militant. It's so precise and everything is just layered, fine and perfect, and that's what a mandolin does. It does
fast. Even likes of slicing onions for that gravy Gary spoke about on last week's pod. Like a mandolin will fly through some onions and it'll get them all nice and consistent and the same.
Yeah.
But use the guard and you'll never go wrong. Eh? Get rid of the guard and then you're going to cut the hand off.
And good luck with that, Marion. And don't sue us. If anything goes wrong. And keep all your conundrums, please, coming into us at food@goaloutnow.com.
Okay, so that's another episode done and dusted. So don't forget to reach out to John Stone at www.johnstonebeef.com to order the boxes, because they really, really are chef-grade quality beef that you can get. And don't forget, if you are ordering from johnstonebeef.com, use the discount to get your 10% discount, and that's JSBDO. Gary's looking at me here because I think O'Neill was about to say that wrong. But make sure you put that in. So when you send them an email for your order, you give them a ring, tell them that you're friends of ours and give them the discount code and you'll get an extra 10%. Super value. And look, if you're enjoying the pod, give us an L follow. Make sure you're sharing it on socials. As I said earlier in the pod, myself and Gary were out on TV3 last week selling the pod, and it surprised me.
Jeez, we were looking well.
Oh, we were looking smashing, fair play to you. Shout out praise, no praise, and all that. But really, what it gave us a huge bounce of listeners. So what that's telling us is that, you know, as much as we love all you guys that are listening, share the love for the lads, because the pod has gone from strength to strength, and myself and Gary and Ed are having the crack doing it. So
loving it.
Yeah. So, and also give us a shout, send in any questions you have for us, because we love that piece as well. And look, we'll chat to you next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Fine Foods. Get premium Irish dry-aged beef delivered to your home at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.